Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, she is now demised. We'll never hear from her again.
Okay.
but you know, with, look, 21st century, we really ought to, and we have all the technology we need for with regard to vision. And even only, I work with the United Nations, even they only recently put in visually accessible technology for websites and so on. So I know you feel a little bit of anger there, and this is a good place to express it. So I could
okay,
go on
great.
And on, but almost everything that you're going to hear, you'll have no issue answering. But I'm going to say one thing that I say to every guest. If there's one thing about anything that you would like to bring out, that if the show ends and you say, oh, my God, I've been on for 40 minutes and I didn't get to say this, what would it be?
You.
Because I will make sure that I ask you the question so that you get it out. Do you have a message from any quarter that you want to make sure gets out on this show?
Okay, if that happens, I'll let you know.
Okay, great. All right, so I'm ready. And what's going to happen is we have about 10 seconds of quiet. And then you're going to hear some music. I'm going to introduce the show, and I'm going to introduce your book, and I'm going to introduce you. And we'll start talking, okay?
Fantastic. Okay.
All right, Stuart, we're ready to go. One second.
When I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair on my head, not my shoulder.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. And you heard a snippet of our little song that we play throughout our show for the past 4 years. We are the winner of the Mature Market Radio Show Award, and we are going to be very mature today, perhaps not, because we have a charming and very, very funny and very counterintuitive guest today. He is the former governor of the great state of New York. His name is David Paterson, but he is also an author. And let me tell you the in-your-face title of his latest book, Black, Blind, and in Charge, A Story of Visionary Leadership and Overcoming Adversity, and it is in hardcover. You can get it on Amazon. I'll tell you a little bit more about how to get that. But Black, Blind, and in Charge, A Story of Visionary Leadership. So, Governor Paterson, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Adrienne. It's very exciting to be on your show. I'm more used to listening to you over the years on Sunday mornings with your financial reports and your analysis of the market. And I always had a little curiosity about some of the people who educated me being blind, particularly when I was younger. My only real learning outlet was the radio. And so news shows and talk shows and that kind of thing really were part of my education. And so there were people that I remembered listening to, and I came to actually meet them in person at certain points. And you are one of them. I met you recently, and it's great to be on this venture that you've had where you've won the award after your 4 years of service in this market.
Well, thank you so much. And it's very gratifying to get the opportunity to speak to people like yourself. But more important to me is that our audience get to know you, because I think it's a real treat, seriously, to get to know you. But one of the things we can say about you is you never, ever hide the fact of your blindness. And in fact, you make sure people know about it. I mean, look, it's no accident that the name of your book includes the word A Story of Visionary Leadership. You could have used any adjective, but you used visionary, and that is because it's a reference to your vision. So I think people do want to know, what is the status of your vision? Was it something at birth? Give us a little bit of your background, because you have been a leader and a fighter when it comes
to the
rights of the disabled. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. So I am, I had an affliction that is less and less existent in society. It's called optic atrophy. It is scarred tissue between the retina and the optic nerve. The common factor that created it is that in the late 40s and in the early 50s, incubators that were had greater technology were too hot, and they were literally burning the infants that were inside them. And so that's the disease I have. Now, the mysterious part of the disease for me is that I was not incubated. I, you know, was born on time. And unless, you know, somebody threw me in an incubator when I didn't know about it, it's unknown how I contracted the disease. I'm not the only person who contracted the disease that wasn't in an incubator, but there was never any real clinical data to explain why we came up with this disease that was more common in premature babies.
Well, that itself is fascinating and frustrating in many ways. But when I read your book and when I talk to you, a word comes to my mind, and it's a real Brooklyn word, and that word is guts. You really have a lot of guts, and I want to talk about that now.
Yeah, you know why I have guts, Adrienne? Because I was born in Brooklyn. I was born in Brooklyn, and what's interesting, just, you know, so we can get a sense of the time period, is in 1959, when I was school age, I was denied access to the public school system in New York City. They had these special schools for the blind or the deaf or that kind of thing. And they were not going to admit me in the public schools. And my mother was not having it, as they say. She also was born in Brooklyn. And she went
with
up to
guts.
Westchester.
With guts, right? Yeah.
Yes, yep. With guts. She went to Connecticut. And then she came to Long Island, and she found a school district in Hempstead, Long Island, which at the time was probably one of the three most successful school districts in the state. And they said to her, "We have had blind children in the school. We will welcome your son if you move out here and he can go to the school." Well, we moved out there, and on the first day of school, my kindergarten teacher told my mother to take me home. She needed about a week to settle the class down. And then they would bring me in. My mother informed the kindergarten teacher that she herself was a third grade teacher and that she'd be happy to calm the class down, and it would take her 15 minutes. Either way, I was going to be sitting in the classroom. So the result of this dispute settled at the principal's office is that I was admitted into the classroom the same time the other children were. And it was that kind of steadfast discipline effort that my parents, but particularly my mother, made to try to give me the same education that other children were getting. And she explained to me years later, she said, "I have nothing against the special schools for different disabilities. I'm sure they educate the children just as well. But school is not just an element of reading books and learning theories. It's a socialization process whereby the people you go to school with will be the people that you socialize with, and inevitably they'll be the people you work with, and I didn't want you to miss those opportunities." So without that, Adrienne, I think right now you'd be interviewing someone else, and I have no idea where I would be.
Yep, and now, of course, that's the kind of thing, and we'll go back to guts here, that you want to make sure other people have the guts to do. And pave the way for them. So you've been very vocal about Amazon, about Kindle, about their accessibility. You've really fought a fight here. Can you tell us a little bit about that before we end this particular segment?
Well, I first want to say, just so that we're totally clear, that most of the guts that I described previously were my mother's guts. I didn't really have that at that point in life. I felt in a lot of ways very rejected. I was turned down for a summer job because of my disability. When I actually helped the man hire the kids that he got, nobody really spoke up for me. My parents didn't even at first understand why he turned me down for the job. And so there were times But I sort of tried to act as if I didn't have a disability, and it never ended well. Don't think that I turned the corner until I was turned down for this job, and I had a very bad semester in school because I couldn't understand why I would be working so hard in school if no one was ever going to hire me. And this professor, who I really liked a lot, showed me a picture of President Franklin Roosevelt, and it was a picture of him being carried in to receive the nomination to run for president. And although I couldn't see it, my professor showed me that his face was beet red. He was furious because he had practiced for weeks at the Executive Mansion in Albany, New York, the governor's mansion, swimming so that he could walk the 100 feet he had to walk to get the nomination, but that people helped him by picking him up and carrying him in. And he said to me, you're going through that same kind of frustration where you haven't resolved within yourself that you have a disability. And boy, did that help me. He, you know, helped me get back, you know, into classes and work hard. And who knew that I would eventually swim in the same pool that
right.
Governor Roosevelt did.
Absolutely.
80 years before. How do you like that?
I like it a lot. I like it a lot. And when we come back, we're going to talk about that moment in time that you did decide to go into politics and what it's meant for you, but also what it's meant for your constituents, because people got a tremendous amount of benefit in the years that you were there, some of which had to do with the bottom line, the budget. And we will be talking about that because it's come up so much in state government now because of COVID. So don't you guys go anywhere. We're coming back with the author of Black, Blind, and In Charge, a story of visionary leadership and overcoming adversity. We'll be right back.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
Okay, that was wonderful. We're not recording for the minute. We're going to go right on to another segment because you're such a pro.
It was
amazing.
I actually felt guilty because, you know, it was a struggle for me to get to where I wound up. I didn't come out acting like the way my mother did.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. We're going to go right back on. You're going to hear some music, and I'm going to go right to that topic. This is wonderful. I hope you're having a good time.
Absolutely.
Okay, Stuart, we are ready.
Okay. You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
And hello, hello, hello once again, and this is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. But fair warning, guys, I am working on expanding this show. I am so thrilled that we are actually skewing, as they say in media, younger and younger. And so we're forming for the spring of 2022 a pilot project, the Longevity Club, and we will be offering you ways to really appreciate how long life is. And one of the things that we do here is we have very, very special guests, with a lot of life experience. And sometimes we ask them, if you knew then what you know now, would you do anything differently? And I'm curious about that. Let me reintroduce to you our phenomenal guest, Governor David Paterson, former governor of the great state of New York, author, Black, Blind, and In Charge. By the way, of course, it's on Amazon. Very easy book to get, a wonderful book to read. It is part bio, definitely, part political history, part advocacy, and a whole lot of humor and experience from somebody who's been around. This is not his first rodeo. You can hear it as he answers the questions. Black, Blind, and In Charge, a story of visionary leadership. So let's go back, Governor Paterson. The moment in time, I mean, you revealed to me during our short break that you perhaps didn't have all the guts that your mom tried to instill in you, that you had to work at it a little bit. So how did you garner the ability to decide, you know what, I'm going into the most difficult arena as a career possible, and that's politics. What was that moment in time that helped you make that decision and give you the guts to do it?
Well, I had felt that I had been turned down for jobs, more so from my disability than being black.
Yeah.
In color, you know, in my early and mid-20s. And so when the opportunity came to run for office, which is something that my father had done, I kind of felt, the only thing I could compare it to is when they take this kind of nobody fighter named Rocky, and they give him a fight with the champion. And they didn't give him the fight because they thought he could win. They did it because it fit into their whole idea of the 200th anniversary of the country and that kind of thing. But it was my moment. There was something great I thought I could do. And I didn't realize how hard I would try, how I would lay it right out on the line to try to win this office. And so even though I knew it was a difficult arena, it might not really have been as difficult for me based on just the rejection that I felt for years before that. And when I got in the arena, the issue came up. One of my opponents circulated, this guy is blind, he's really not held that many jobs, he doesn't know what he's doing, that kind of thing. And I got the chance to defend myself in front of audiences. And on one occasion, I actually threw the literature at the opponent of mine whose people printed it, and this caused quite a scene. But the fact that I had the guts to basically challenge him in front of an audience to a fight, which never goes on in politics, but that night, it sent a message that I was disabled, but not a person who was going to let themselves get pushed around. And I think that it traveled with me through my career. But I will say that it was at a very low point in my life, like just when you think everything's going wrong, this little incident happens, and from it, the opportunity for me to run for office, and the gentleman who talked me into it said to me, you won't win, but people will see you, and I think they're going to see a future for you. Well, the only thing that went wrong in his plan was
I did win. Right. Now, let's talk about going wrong. You had a real hard – when you let's say you inherited the governorship itself. But that didn't matter. You were the governor, and you took over, quickly in a very bad situation where our budget – I was living in New York City at that time, so I know what was going on in the city. And it was not the best place to live, and we were going broke. So this is takes a tough guy to make to turn that around, which you did. And the reason I'm bringing that up now is COVID. COVID is bankrupting a lot of states for a lot of reasons, for healthcare reasons, for direct service reasons, for the fact that people can't work, businesses closing, and so on. So it wasn't so different then, except that it wasn't because of a pandemic. How did you do it? If you could, you were talking now in front of the governor's annual conference, and you're telling them one thing they've got to do right away. What would that be?
I would say, keep trying to get as many people vaccinated as possible. Keep trying to make sure that we try to keep our public areas safe. You know, if you want to ask people to wear masks, that's fine. But the one thing you can't do is to continue to shut down businesses, because they, particularly small businesses, those are two-thirds of the businesses that exist, and they are literally generating, they are the catalyst for the foundation of our democracy. And so individuals start to become bankrupt, and then the states can't pay. You know that old saying, when you owe the bank $100, that's your problem. When you owe the bank $100 million, that's bank's problem.
Right.
And once it becomes the bank's problem, it becomes everybody's problem. And that's what nearly happened to us about 10 or 12 years ago when I was in office. And that's what could happen to us now if we don't keep sight of that. And my heart goes out to all those people who spent, you know, money they borrowed to businesses. And it's completely falling apart because the customers can't come and they don't come. And we saw this happen during these holidays where so many places where people move around in New York City, there was nothing going on. And that's really not only sad, but it's painful, but it's also economically destructive.
Yes, but I do want everyone to know that one of the things that you might really look for when you read Black, Blind, and In Charge is a metaphor. David Paterson really is a metaphor for inspiration on many levels to many people. One, of course, is the disabled. That's easy to see. But also, listen to this. When he did take office, there was a $21.3 billion, I know we can't get a mind around such a number, budget deficit. It was the worst economy and downturn in New York City that you can imagine. And he turned that whole thing around. So it's even inspirational for our leaders.
Well, you know, Adrian, I have to tell you, particularly on social issues, a progressive Democrat and someone who was very well liked in the legislature, I was very well liked by the Republicans because although we had disagreements, I always tried not to allow them to be personal. And I didn't always have what you would think would be the position of someone who represented the area I represented. However, when that deficit came, first of all, I think when I got elected, it was almost like Viva Zapatos. Like everyone was so happy that the previous governor was leaving. Everybody was happy for me. Someone said, you got the largest ovation that I've seen a governor get giving an inauguration speech in 40 years. And I said, yeah, but half of it was just that the other governor was leaving. But the point is to balance that budget, I had to take on positions that I had opposed when I was a state senator. And the reason I had to do that, it was the only way I thought to keep the state from going into insolvency. And no state had gone into default since 1929 when Arizona did. I had to basically cut as many programs as I could. The mantra of the progressives is tax the rich, tax the rich. There were not enough rich people between New York State and Jupiter to pay down that debt. So it had to involve cuts. So I was actually seen as a traitor by many people to the cause because they felt that I was inflicting more damage than my predecessor two governors back, Governor Pataki, who was a Republican. But neither Governor Pataki nor Governor Spitzer or anybody had ever faced a budget that had, whose original projection was $5 billion of deficit and then quadrupled to $21.3 billion. And the reason it happened is not that New York was not managed as well as other states. It's just that 22.5% of our revenues were derived from Wall Street profits. So when Wall Street tanked, New York State tanked immediately.
That was the end. So when we come back, look, I have to admit to you, you said a magic word. The word was Spitzer. We can also look at your life as stepping up to the plate. We could also look at your life metaphorically as a baseball game where somebody really did step up to the plate metaphorically and actually in a moment's notice. And take over in a very bad situation and do things that were not popular but had to be done. And that is something we can learn. But I do want to talk to you about a little bit about the scandal when we come back. Yes, I said scandal, folks. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me not even a bit, because I am happy and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
Okay, so this is going so. This is so much fun. Everything
on
you.
Oh, it really is.
On this, it's great. So I do want to say a little bit about Spitzer, but I'm honestly more interested in you and what it was like to take it over during that sort of media blitz that was going on. And then I do want to, if you don't mind, I did bring up Amazon and Kindle, and I thought that was important work. Can I bring that up again and get a little bit of...
Oh, sure. Please do.
We'll do Spitzer first, and then we'll do Amazon and Kindle. We're ready, Stu.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, cause I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
And hello, 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 this is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. Let me do a little bit of housekeeping here before we get back to Governor David Patterson. A great state of New York, wasn't so great when he took it over, was much greater when he left, all because of him. But I do want to tell you that you can give me the information that you want to hear on this show and even suggest guests. This is your show. So I send you to my name, Adrienne, A-D-R-I-A-N-E, Berg, B-E-R-G .com. It's as simple as that. Go to Ask Adrienne. You can ask me questions about our guests, about longevity, about health span, about living better and healthier during the extra 30 years that I think science has given all of us if we pay some attention. But you can also tell me things. You can tell me topics that you would like, things that are important to you. This is the Fountain of Truth. And we tell the truth. We bring you information that nobody else brings you because it's embarrassing. We'll have something about incontinency, if that's something you're interested in. We've done that. We have sex after 60, if that's interesting to you. But we also have how to select your next home, how to create it forever, how to pick the next car. We have the greatest experts that affect your life in every way. But today we have what I consider actually an inspirational expert. He would call himself many other things, but I call him an expert in inspiration. Listen to the name of his latest book, Black, Blind, and in Charge, A Story of Visionary Leadership and Overcoming Adversity. Now, Governor Patterson, a couple of things here. By the way, that book, of course, is very easy to get. It's on Amazon, not a problem. You talk about overcoming. You overcame something that very few politicians even overcome, and that was a media blitz about a scandal where you became the governor because the sitting governor was brought down by what I think, I was there at the time, his own actions. Tell us a little bit about the Spitzer scandal, and the fact is that we have many people listening that are not from New York, don't know what we're talking about. Any New Yorker could tell you the story. But you tell us a little bit about that story from your point of view, when you heard about
on,
it, what you decided to do about it. Go ahead.
March 10th of 2008, I go up to Albany. I'm the lieutenant governor. And I get a phone call that the governor can't attend this event in the morning in the Capitol in Albany. And I attended for him. And I said to them, I wish you all had given me some notice because I'm very busy up here. The lieutenant governor is never busy, but we say those things to try to, because we have pride, you see.
Yeah.
So I go to the event, I come back, and then they call back, and they said, there's another event. We'd like you to take the governor's place because he's still not going to be in Albany yet. But this event is a meeting with the cardinal and all the bishops. So I said to the governor's secretary, I said, listen, I don't know if you all are aware of this, but a meeting between a cardinal and a governor is head of state to head of state. I said, now, if Governor Spitzer can't go, he can't delegate that to me. I said, that would be as if the Queen of England came to the White House to see President Bush, and he was busy, so he sends Dick Cheney. You can't do that. So they said, well, the governor said it was okay, so you can go. I said, no, I'm not going to go. And what I want to know is, has everybody in this building gone crazy, including the governor?
Right. Did they lose
their
mind?
What was going on, it was like being in a movie where everyone knows what's going on except for the protagonist. And we see this poor person trying to govern their life, but they don't know what's about to hit them. So, of course, at 5 minutes after one, they call me up and they said, listen, the governor's going to resign. He was caught with a prostitute, and he's going to resign, and you're going to be the governor. And I said, well, okay, when's this going to happen? They said at 2:15. So I have an hour and 10 minutes to figure out how the rest of my life is going to go. So I decided I wanted to get out of the Capitol so that the media couldn't get near me, and I opened the door to my office.
Yes, they're going to chase you down the street.
At 15 camera lights went off in my face, so I slammed the door. I put my back to the door, and I said to my wonderful secretary, I said, I think my life just changed. And so fortunately, I call my father, who was also in politics and always seemed to have a sense of what the right thing to do was. And I said, what should I do? And he said, call the other state leaders and tell them what happened. I said, but I think the governor should call them. And he said, David, the governor hasn't even called you. And in the next hour, you're going to be the governor. You know what all those other elected officials are going to say? How come you didn't tell me? So I call them all up, and who calls back first but United States Senator Hillary Clinton, now running for president against Barack Obama. She's the first one to call back, and she says, David, there's something ominous. Something happened. And I said, yes, the governor's going to resign at 2:15. And she said, why is the governor going to resign, David? And I thought to myself,
uh-oh.
How do you explain another sex scandal to Hillary Clinton? And what happened, Adrian, it was almost as if someone, the Brinks truck, into Albany and unloaded like $3 billion and left it on the ground. And everyone's running, trying to get their piece of the action, the money.
Right.
People pestered me. Someone told me Spitzer was going to appoint him to a very high position. And would I respect it? I said, sure, I respect it. It turned out Spitzer wasn't going to appoint him to this position, and it got me in trouble with the person who was there. It was just like absolute mayhem for a week and a half. And finally, we put off my swearing in to St. Patrick's Day in 2008, March 17th. And I have to say, when I look back on it, as hectic as it was, I'm kind of proud that I was able to maintain my disposition and give an inauguration speech that people around the country applauded, because this was now a worldwide event. 3 years afterward, after I was out of office, I landed in this airport in Beijing, and all these people were trying to talk to me, but they were speaking in Chinese, and the interpreter said, they want to know if you would take a picture with them. I said, how do they even know who I am? They said, the world is smaller, David. Everyone saw you sworn in that day.
Well, you know, it was very elegant. It was very elegant, because I saw it too. And one of the things I do want to bring out to the audience was to understand what was going on. Think of a chaotic moment in politics that you've lived through in your own state or in our country, God forbid, an assassination, a resignation, a scandal. And everything is focused on that, which is a very negative, painful thing. And all of a sudden, a sort of an elegant person comes in and takes over, and there's a calming effect, and you don't even know why. We're hearing from Governor Patterson that he wasn't personally so calm, but he gave that appearance, and sometimes that's more important than anything else. And all of a sudden, it is true, all of a sudden, with all of the scandal and all the media loves to blow it all up, even though it was pretty big anyway, to tell you the truth, there were pictures, there was all kinds of stuff going on. All of a sudden, it got quiet, and there was business as usual, and somebody was taking care of the government, and people got calmer, and things got better. And that was kind of the trajectory for the voter. And in some ways, it was an elegant and very beautiful thing to see. And when I come back, I want to talk about a couple of more elegant and beautiful things about Governor Patterson, his fight for people with vision. But we do have to look at the fact that the very first word of your book title is black. And I think we have to go there. I think we have to talk about what that meant from a political point of view and what you think it means today from a political point of view, and have things changed in the years since you were the governor. We will be right back. We, as always, are the fountain of truth. Don't you guys go anywhere.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da.
Okay, so this is great. Now, we are in the last segment here. So we're going to talk a little bit about, as I say, the your fight with regard to vision accessibility and also the status that you felt, because you've said, you know, I think I had more problems because of my blindness than because of my color. But we need to look at that a little bit and see if you think things have changed, improved, deproved, where you're at with that. Is that okay?
Sure, absolutely.
Good. And is there anything else that you, because it's our last segment, is there anything else that you want to bring out before we conclude?
Oh, I think we've covered it pretty well. And no, I think we're doing great.
Great. All right, Stu, we are ready to rock and roll.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da.
And hello, 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 this is Adrienne Berg, and we are Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. Unaccountably, we're at our last segment. I'm not going to do a lot of housekeeping here because I want to get right back to our guest. But I do want to tell you, if you have forgotten or you didn't know, that song, that little snippet of song, is part of a 10-minute musical with actually three or four characters written especially for this show by a Broadway musician and lyricist. And as you know, we are rebranding our show. We will have the Longevity Club, and we'll go back to them for a brand new song. So for those of you who don't know, I'll give you an opportunity to hear the whole 10 minutes before we say goodbye to it sometimes in the spring. Right now, I want to go to our wonderful guest, David Patterson. You know, I'd like to say Governor David Patterson, but I almost said David, Dr. David Patterson, and I'll tell you why. Yes, because you've helped a lot of people. You've helped a lot of people with vision issues, not from the medical point of view, but from the status point of view, from the accessibility point of view. So tell us a little bit about that, because you're pretty angry when there is not vision accessibility, and you've done a few things to fix that. Just give us that background for a second.
Well, you know, because I went to public school, I was not part of a lot of the blindness organizations. And when I got into politics, you know, as an African-American, I was in the NAACP, and I was in some economic development organizations trying to get contracts from minority vendors and that kind of thing. But I got challenged on that point, and it really hurt me because it was as if it was being suggested I was running away from my blindness. It just wasn't really my orientation, but when I got into it, I particularly enjoyed working with the National Federation of the Blind, who had the same kind of guts that my mother had. And they challenged Amazon in the beginning of 2012 that they had the Kindle, but you needed vision to turn the Kindle on. Now, once you got it on, a blind person could operate it, but you could not see to turn it on. So we contacted them and asked them if they'd fix it. No. They weren't going to, you know, just make the slight adjustment in a new model to fix it. So they had a demonstration in Seattle outside of the headquarters, and they told Jeff Bezos and them that a former governor who's blind, and everybody knew who that was going to come and protest, and the Amazon didn't believe it would actually happen. But I went there and marched with them right in front of the Amazon office. And that sent a little shockwave through the system. And there were so many situations, you know, phones, all this new technology. And sometimes what it's actually doing is making it more difficult for the blind when it would be the easiest thing to access a lot of these products. Now, there are some companies now that are coming out where they'll take the standard equipment and to make the adjustment and then sell it themselves, which is actually very good. But to me, it just demonstrated a continuing feeling that people with disabilities, for some reason, are not owed the same opportunities that others are. Right now, we have a sub-minimum wage, and I don't think many people know what it actually is. In other words, if a disabled person works for you, you have a right not to pay the minimum wage. This came from the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938, where the blindness groups and the other disabled groups just wanted the opportunity to work.
To work,
so they were
yes.
willing originally to work for less than the minimum wage. But as the years went on, people now who work knitting in places, and they make $2 an hour, and that's outrageous. And that's another thing, if I ever get a chance, I'm going to try to get Congress to look at that situation and reverse it.
Well, I'll tell you, you have some very important coalitions going on, and I'm going to be the cheerleader for you to be part of all of this. You should know, and this is just a little aside for everybody, that the United Nations NGO on Aging, their leader, our leader, I'm on that committee, is Cynthia Stewin. She's the chairperson, and she was the president for the Lighthouse for the Blind. And when she stepped down after many years of making that a very successful organization and took over the NGO on Aging at the United Nations, she made sure that everything that gets done, and this is going to affect WHO, World Health Organization, is accessible to people of low vision or no vision. So that's how important this community is. And there is definitely a coalition between those with low vision, with disability issues, and the older adults. Because if it hasn't happened at birth, as it did with you, it eventually will happen one way or another if we continue the kind of frailty aging that we have today. So it's a tremendous coalition, and there's a lot more clout out there for this. But
you know, I had
a
lot of books sent to me.
Yeah.
A lot of books were sent to me on record before even tape when I was a kid. And I was about 11 or 12, and I heard my record on. It was like one of my books. It was on. And I went upstairs, and my grandmother was sitting in a chair listening to it. And she said, wow, you know, I can listen to your book instead of straining my eyes all days and trying to read the newspaper.
Sure.
And that's,
well, that's
exactly the idea, that as people's skills diminish as they get older, that there are still ways for them to be informed, to be involved, and to be important.
Well, that is so wonderful to hear, and coalitions are being built even as we speak. But before we end, we do have to look at one other thing, and you agreed. Black, blind, and in charge. And you actually have black before the blind. It's look, did it affect you? You talk so much about your blindness and low vision and so on, disabilities and being marginalized. But what about color? And do you see a difference? I mean, since then we've gone through some riots, we've gone through some Black Lives Matters, we've gone through equity now, the importance of equity in everything we do. Is there a real palpable difference, or are we still just talking?
I think that anybody that has not seen change for the better in the last 60, 70 years, ever since Dr. Martin Luther King started protesting, is a charlatan. There has been monumental improvement in opportunities for African Americans, men and women. Right now in New York State, the lieutenant governor is black. Both of the legislative leaders are black. The mayor of the city of New York is black. The attorney general of the state is black. And I know I'm leaving someone out.
Probably prominent, a lot of people.
And is African American. When I became governor of New York just in 2008, I was the only statewide black elected official. Now, the problem is that some of the institutional forces haven't particularly changed. So opportunities for not only African Americans, but other minorities and women-owned businesses in New York State are still really woeful compared to what you would think it would be. And to do that, we are going to have to, rather than having these MWBE, Minority and Women's Business Enterprise programs, we're going to have some real partnerships between these businesses and very large businesses, which will expand business, not contract it. And so I think in a lot of those areas, we're going to have to make some changes. In terms of the how people perceive things, I think we all just have to take each other's word for the fact that we had the worst genocide in the history of this world in a 3 or 4 year period in Germany when Hitler destroyed 6 million Jewish people. And the remnants and the feelings and the anxiety that came from that incident is undeniable. Similarly, we had 244 years of slavery and another 91 years of segregation, and it put African Americans in a place, it put black people in a place where it's going to take a very long time to overcome not only the perceived notions, also the realistic fact that opportunities just don't exist as much as they might for if they had a different color of skin. That doesn't mean that the current white population has to take responsibility for what everybody else did for 300 or 400 years. It simply means that we have to look at the conditions that actually exist and demonstrate the same charity that we would wish would be bestowed on us if we had the same problem. That's how I see it.
Well, you see it in such, again, an inspirational way, a healing way. And I've never heard you say this. This is the first time I've asked this question or heard you say it, even though we had a wonderful dinner together, and it's almost tearful. I wish everybody would take this to heart for the new year. It's probably one of the nicest discussions about a very difficult subject that I've heard in a very long time. Black, blind, and in charge, a man you should get to know. It's not hard to get to know David Patterson. All you have to do is read the book. His heart is always on his sleeve, A Story of Visionary Leadership and Overcoming Adversity. And, of course, that's easily gotten on Amazon. So I thank you so much. I cannot thank you more. It's been one of the greatest shows that we've done because of you as a guest. And I'm going to say to everybody else, I know that the COVID is rearing its ugly head again, but I'll say it anyway metaphorically. Get out there, kids, and make it happen.
Inappropriate,
wow.
inappropriate for our age.
And that's the way we do it. Pretty cool, huh?
Well, I have to tell you, compared to the shows that you used to do,
yes.
You are so dynamic doing this show. You were a little more laid back when you did the finance stuff, but I was stimulated by the questions and just the organization of it. I'm just so happy you asked me to do it.
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, it's a totally different show because the other was a call-in show.
Yeah,
and it was
yeah.
kind of a how-to, and it, you know, look, it's dry in the sense that it's taxes and what can you do.
Right.
but these shows... I mean, you certainly are an outstanding guest, but I've even had people talk about proctology, and we were able to get things out of them, you know, and all of a sudden they would be talking about their mother. I mean, this has been my experience, and so I love it so much. And I guess because I'm not really very intimidated, I can ask people, all kinds of people, questions that they don't get asked. And they always say to me, I had so much fun. Every single one.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you got it out of me when you talked about the elderly and losing vision, and
right.
it flashed into my mind that time I came in the house, you know, like no one put my book records on other than me. I mean, in other words,
right.
if they were playing music, I wouldn't have thought anything. But I hear my own book that I was reading,
right.
and I run upstairs. I thought, did I leave it on or something? And my grandmother saved me, and she's like, no, this is great. I'm enjoying this. I don't have to kill my eyes trying to read the newspaper.
Sure. I mean, it's a natural coalition. So let me just tell you a couple of things, and I'll tell Mary also because she's really the PR person around here. We do a lot with the show. We do put on our own social media. We give you a link to it. You can use it any way you want or not. It's up to you on your social media. You can, we also send you, and this is very cool, a two-minute, and we may do two of them for you. We call them a headliner. And it takes your words, and it puts them in colors. And those colors then become a video. And that
wow.
can go onto social media, and it can also go onto YouTube. And we put it on our YouTube channel, and you can give it to anybody if you want to promote your book or give it to your publicist if you have one or whoever, and it helps promote the book. We also, of course, put it on our own website. And the interesting part of it is we have about 6,000 who on LinkedIn, and these are people who buy books. So, you know, it's always fun. It's always interesting, and we promote it that way. And then we give you all the information to promote it. And it also goes on BizTalk Radio, which is like an app. And people who have the app could hear it even on that app. So that's what we're doing now. Yeah, that's what we're doing now. But I'm planning to expand the show in the spring, frankly, after my daughter's wedding. So you know why I'm waiting for the spring. But anyway,
sure.
We'll be doing even more. Okay? So that's what I want. And I'll tell Mary about that, too. So thank you. This was just terrific.
I can't thank you enough. Thanks, Stuart. This was we're having a hectic week, but this is a very uplifting moment around here for me.
Well, for me as well. So a good time was had by all. That's what's important. Take care.
Fantastic. I hope to talk to you soon. Take care.
Yeah, I hope to get in. I'm going to tell you the truth. I was going to New York, and I canceled it because of COVID.
It's a little difficult out here right now.
And I was going next week, and everything I wanted to go to had been canceled. It was quite something. But I'll get out there.
Yeah.
I'll get out there in February or March, and we'll have lunch again, dinner. Okay? It's great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Take care.
Take care.
Bye.
Right. Bye-bye.